Chapter 54 The Imitator. For there shall arise false Christs and false prophets, and shall show great signs and wonders, insomuch that if it were possible, they shall deceive the very elect. Jesus. 1887. Of all the false teachers, perhaps Mary Plunkett was the most offensive. She had scarcely completed the primary class at the college when she was pouring out her scorn for Mrs. Eddy in a letter to her new friend, Emma Hopkins. No sooner had she returned to Detroit than she was telling the practitioner who had healed her, Mrs. Annie Knott, that she would take the normal class and be head of the movement in all the territory west of Buffalo, else sweep Mrs. Eddy from the face of the earth. After teaching Mary Plunkett, Mrs. Eddy added to the college advertisement, "No invalids and only persons of good moral character are accepted as students. All students are subject to examination and rejection, and they are liable to leave the class if found unfit to remain in it." She had not issued a certificate to Mrs. Plunkett, but that woman was undeterred. She immediately set forth to outdistance the leader. Mary Plunkett had the ability to match her audacity, and with her most important convert, Emma Hopkins, she soon had a magazine imitating the journal, a college in Chicago, and classes and teachers spread broadcast. In all their work, the two women appropriated the name Christian Science, causing a good deal of confusion in the public thought. Mrs. Eddy's defense of Christian Science was unceasing, but her pamphlet by that name was out of print in August. Its place was filled, however, by a new publication from the leader's pen entitled Christian Science, No and Yes. This pamphlet sold for 25 cents and was considered to be, quote, just the thing to put into the hands of skeptical inquirers, end quote. Mrs. Plunkett was bidding for those skeptical inquirers most aggressively. In August or September, she journeyed to Boston to see Mrs. Eddy for the purpose of proposing that they divide the field by the Mississippi River, the West to be her exclusive territory. If the following account was not of Mary Plunkett's visit, it was of the same character. A lady came to the door with a box of American Beauty roses and begged Lydia to accept them and give them to Mrs. Eddy and say that she would call in the afternoon to see Mrs. Eddy. On seeing the bouquet, Mrs. Eddy said, "Take them away. What a mockery." Lydia took them to the kitchen and all day long suffered severely. Mrs. Eddy finally said, "Lydia, what have you done with those roses?" "I took them to the kitchen, Mother." "Are they destroyed?" "No." "Go to the kitchen immediately and take the roses and put them in the fire." Reluctantly, she complied, and immediately she was released from the pain and was her normal self again. About an hour later, Mrs. Eddy said to her, "You are free?" "Yes, Mother, I am." "Lydia, do you know what that means?" "That was theosophy. They believe that if they can get something into your hands, they can use you as an avenue. Now be on your watch. Shortly after Mrs. Plunkett's visit, Mrs. Eddy received the following letter from a student in Chicago. I have this day heard a statement from Mrs. Plunkett to this effect, that she had recently called upon you, that she had found you sick and unable to go on with your class, that you had invited her to return to the fold, and that she refused your invitation because she could not agree with you about teaching. I did not credit her statements and wish to know the facts over your own signature, that I may be able to deny these and all such insinuations. B. Sherman. Mrs. Eddy published both the letter and her response to it. The woman referred to did call on me about the 1st of September and sent up my servant with her card and a bouquet of flowers. I was in good health and spirits, and the entire substance of my conversation with her was a calm and kind rebuke of any false position taken in the name of Christian Science. The substance of her talk was a timid attempt to raise herself in my estimation. After she had left me, I remarked to my clerk, quote, "This call was made for the purpose of subsequently misrepresenting what I had said, and you ought to have heard our conversation," end quote. Mrs. Mary H. Plunkett's report of our interview, as stated in the above letter, is an utter falsehood throughout. Nothing of the kind was said. It is not probable that I should ask a person to assist me in teaching Christian Science, whom I regarded as too unsafe to be received into my normal class. Past experience had taught me her character, and I regret to add that on the evening of her call, I saw no improvement in her motives and aims. She is reported as saying that she paid, quote, $300 for her tuition at the Massachusetts Metaphysical College, and that I then required $200 more to grant her a certificate, which she refused to pay, end quote. These are the facts relative to our business transactions. When she entered the primary course, she claimed not to have the money to pay for her tuition and asked me to take some jewelry as part payment. I declined, but discounted 1/3 on her tuition, and she paid me just $200. The only money I ever received for certificates is 25 cents on each annually renewed certificate. I gave her no certificate solely because she did not improve the opportunity she had in the class of receiving my instructions, and because I learned with sad surprise that only God's hand and lessons could so change her motives and morals as to make her receptive of Christian Science. My autumn term was referred to in our conversations, but I simply told her the primary class was postponed to accommodate some members of the bar who wished to enter my college, but were obliged also to attend the September term of court. There are sometimes to be met certain adepts who compel honest people to besmirch their own pens and to spend their time in correcting injurious falsehoods. If you converse with these masqueraders, however cautiously and kindly, they are sure to go away and belie you, and repeat, professedly, what they want people to think that you have said. This retards the cause of Christian Science. How shall we treat such defamers? If we refuse to meet them, we lose a possible chance of doing good to this class of creatures. Even if we do not grant them interviews, they will improve other chances to do us evil. Charity receives many blows, but uncharitableness in ourselves is more to be feared than the blows. On the 10th of September, Mrs. Eddy had a vision of what lay in store for the children of Israel, who disbelieved her sayings or refused to follow her lead. It caused her to give a resume of her experience in learning that the basic evil to be overcome was not sickness, but sin. Step by step, I began to learn that the remedy of sin must be searched out. The arguments to heal sickness caused by the fear of physical beliefs would not heal the sufferings caused by the fear of sin. Here I find that I must learn through the Old Testament the way of sin, and that the power of the Egyptian necromancy must be met over again with the power of truth in divine science, and that we must know how to conquer, through truth and love, the belief of hate and mediumship, whereby Samuel was brought before Saul, or the mediums will use the power of their belief in spirits to produce diseases beyond any physical methods to do it. These beliefs, produced through hate, can only be met through spirit. If the least animal magnetism or human belief is employed, it will prevent the recovery of the sick, and the mediums and mesmerists will kill all they undertake to kill. When you think you have mastered disease on a physical basis, you are mistaken. You have got to learn that it must be healed on the basis of sin causing it, not necessarily your own sins, but the sins of others, their hatred, envy, and efforts to kill you, just as you have had to heal disease on a physical basis by taking up the minds that loved your patients and were misleading their thought. Now your teacher is learning her way in divine science through suffering, through the rule of sin. 20 years ago, when she had mastered the physical cause of disease, no circumstances, material, could produce a cold or catarrh upon her. Colds and catarrhs caused by the arguments and beliefs of sin will reappear more sudden and inveterate than from changes of the weather, exposures, or contagion, when these effects are caused by the faith of theosophy in empowering evil spirits to do the work for them, as the witch of Endor brought up Samuel for Saul. That was a lie, but a larger and more frightful lie, because it embraced a belief in the power of the dead, as well as the living, to afflict the people. All the beliefs of sin and their methods of destroying the peace of mind, filling the body with disease, administering poison through mind with more effect than the doctors could administer it through matter, have to be met and overcome through divine science by every mortal, here or hereafter. The acknowledgement that sin was the basic cause of all Earth's problems was the stumbling block for most of her students. They accepted eagerly all she said about good, but they did not want to uncover evil. Hence, for each one that followed the leader, there were 20 that practiced mental healing in their own way, closing their eyes to animal magnetism. From this field, it was not difficult for Mary Plunkett to gather quite a following. If Mrs. Eddy would not divide the seamless robe, Mrs. Plunkett intended to have all of it. The National Christian Scientists Association had met in Boston in April. Mrs. Plunkett organized from a convention of mental healers, which met also in Boston on the 19th of October, her organization, which she called the International Christian Scientist Association. In November, Plunkett and Hopkins began a new monthly journal called Truth, a magazine of Christian Science. Her next move was to lay claim to all the Eastern Territory, leaving Mrs. Hopkins to manage everything in the Midwest. She made her headquarters in New York City. Though there were two academies and several practitioners in that city listed in the journal, the flamboyant Mrs. Plunkett took the town by storm and was soon referred to as the, quote, high priestess, end quote, of Christian Science. Mrs. Eddy's sincere followers were practically inundated by the tidal wave she caused. But there was one student, Mrs. Augusta Stetson, who more than all others rose to the challenge. In later years, Mrs. Eddy referred fondly to Mrs. Stetson as her, quote, war horse, end quote. But though Augusta was indispensable to the battle, staunch and faithful, the mockery of the imitator, the false leadership, deceiving the public, could be overcome only by the true leader.